You're listening to Leaning Toward Wisdom, the podcast, episode 5036. You feel like you've walked inside a 1960s beach movie, don't you? You expect Annette Funicello, Frankie Avalon to come strolling up. End of view. No, it's just me, Randy Cantrell, coming to you from the Yellow Studio. I know I can turn it around. Turning over a new leaf and other turnings. Greetings. Welcome inside the Yellow Studio. I'm glad that you clicked play. I hope you are a subscriber. If you're not, well, do it. Do it now. You can go to the website leaningtowardwisdom.com. According to the book by Dan Pink entitled Drive, The Surprising Truth About What Motivates Us, research shows that the secret to high performance is not our biological drive or our reward and punishment, you know, carrot and stick drive, but our third drive. You didn't know you even had a third drive, did you? The third drive is our deep-seated desire to direct our own lives, to extend and expand our abilities, and to live a life of purpose. Well, there you go. Mr. Pink also reveals a new approach to motivation, says that it has three essential elements. Number one, autonomy, the desire to direct our own lives. Number two, mastery, the urge to get better and better. It's something that matters. And number three, purpose, the yearning to do what we do in the service of something larger than ourselves. Well, who can argue that? I certainly will not. Dr. Alan R. Zimmerman's book entitled Pivot, How One Turn in Attitude Can Lead to Success. It provides a 9-step attitude revolution to help the reader. You ready? You taking notes? You don't need to. I wrote all this down. It's over at leaningtowardwisdom.com. Just find episode 5036. Number one, evaluate your status quo. Number two, choose your mental strategy. Number three, curb the negativity blocking your success. Number four, improve your confidence. Number five, build stronger relationships. Number six, experience an instant boost in enthusiasm. Number seven, make every day a successful day. Number eight, stop worrying. And number nine, overcome failure. I guess I could. Yeah, technically, scientifically, I know I can, but I don't want to. Count the number of books that I have that preach a message of positive change, making a mental turn towards something more positive, taking steps to climb out of failure so you can achieve success or at least higher success. If words would do it, I'd have done it decades ago. And if words would do it, well, you'd think I'd expand this podcast and I'd release daily episodes. Yes, you would be wrong. We need words, encouragement, but we need something more. We need something much, much more. Do you know why thousands of books are published each year on dieting, health, and fitness? Well, of course you do, because it's one of the largest selling markets on the planet. But why is that? Why do people buy these books in droves? For starters, most are likely searching for the magic bullet. You know, the one, that one trick, that one special thing that's going to finally crack the code, give them the answer that they have looked for all of their fat, out of shape lives. And they're going to keep looking till they find something that sounds easy enough for them to try. And if it works, hey, eureka, there'll be the testimonial that you'll read about. If not, okay, they'll just keep on looking at all those other new releases. Others, they're not keeping an eye peeled on these books or even this topic necessarily. Timing is right. And today, for whatever reason, they are driven to search out an answer for their circumstances. It's kind of like a guy driving to work in the morning, no care in the world, especially no concern about his tires. Not looking at these books before today, these people. But on the way home, the guy driving the car has got a blowout. Well, now he's very interested in tires. So it may be with the fitness person, health person, diet person. 20 pounds later, in a scale-staring epiphany, a person just may decide in an instant, man, I got to get a grip on my weight. And now they're looking at all these various books. Maybe it's all timing. Timing of the message, timing of reception of the message, and let's not discount how the message is delivered. Spend some time over at YouTube, and if you're old like me, you're not going to hear much new. Well, unless it's technology-based, then you're going to hear a lot of new stuff. But all the expert testimony about human behavior, motivation, drive, inspiration, all the raw, this is stuff that I grew up reading and hearing. And it wasn't new then either. It was ancient even when I was growing up. Ecclesiastes chapter 1 verse 9 says, that which has been is what will be. That which is done is what will be done. And there is nothing new under the sun. Well, indeed, there's not much new under the sun when it comes to human behavior and what we chase and why we chase it, even how we chase it. As for books, hey, the wise man had something to say about that too in Ecclesiastes 12:12. And further, my son, be admonished by these. Of making many books, there is no end, and much study is wearisome to the flesh. Yeah, truer still. Books, 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 and more books, largely a regurgitation of very ancient maxims wrapped in new clothing. You know, I can go buy a new suit, but it's the same old body underneath. Sometimes we likely look like the Apostle Paul did to Festus in Acts chapter 26, verse 24. Now, as he thus made his defense, Festus said with a loud voice, Paul, you are beside yourself. Much learning is driving you mad. Well, I may be mad. It's doubtful due to too much study. It's entirely possible, though, to read too much and to study too much, to think about something too much. And again, there's this critical missing component. Fat folks want to turn it around. People lost on the highway, well, they need to turn it around. Procrastinators need to turn over a new leaf and stop putting things off. People who have lost their way absolutely need to turn it around. Largely, it seems to me that we're just a bunch of critters headed in the wrong direction, needing to turn it around. I mean, even high achievers sometimes get themselves turned around, going in the wrong direction. Which begs the question, why is it so easy to go the wrong way? Here in the big city, we occasionally will encounter roadway disasters, largely at the hands of drunk drivers. They somehow maneuver onto the highway going the wrong direction. Sometimes they can be safely stopped without incident. Other times they cause a tragic head-on collision that takes lives. And the sober among us, we question, how in the world did they manage to get their car onto the highway via an exit ramp? Well, it doesn't matter. They did it. And it may be a skill that's best performed when the human mind is out of control. Maybe that's the key. Maybe that's the key to all of this going the wrong way. We are out of our minds. It's quite possible. I know I can turn it around. You ever said that to yourself before? Man, I have. Even said it out loud a time or two. No, way more than that. Only to prove to myself and to others, you know, I was wrong. I can't turn it around. Well, to be fair, I didn't turn it around. Maybe I could have. I just couldn't or didn't figure out how. Or I couldn't figure out how to soon enough to show myself and others. You ever say it to yourself? You ever say it to somebody else? You ever hear somebody say it? I know I can turn it around. I know I can turn it around. It's really a rather empty statement if you just stop and think about it. I know I can turn it around. First of all, the reason that we say it is because we need to turn it around. And maybe we've been going in the wrong direction for a very long time, and now for some odd reason, we're going to make this declaration, this bold, seemingly courage-filled declaration that we know we can turn it around. Well, how do we know that? I mean, it's not because we've done it before. Truth is, all we've done so far is prove how capable we are of driving in the wrong direction. We got that down cold. But this turning thing, I mean, what makes us think that now we can do it? It's kind of like whistling in the dark. You ever do that as a kid? You know, we make these statements like this, I know I can turn around, hoping to build up the courage and whatever else we need to get it turned around. It being our life or some specific pursuit that we may be failing to catch. Kids try something and then they fail. And then as soon as an adult attempts any effort at coaching, depending on the age of the kid, but usually as soon as an adult comes in with an attempt to coach him or show him something, the kid is going to make this bold claim. I can do it. I can do it. Well, we've sat here watching you struggle for 10 minutes. I mean, maybe you're a bigger idiot than you thought. Maybe you ought to stop and let us try to help you. Nope. I want to do it on my own. Okay, fine then. And then 10 more minutes of failure ensues. Okay, maybe they get it. Maybe they don't. Maybe they quit after proving to themselves, well, I thought I could, but I was wrong. I can't. These moments can become life-defining. It's the reverse of the little engine that could. It's the little engine that couldn't. And far more little engines can't than can. Stubborn, uncoachable engines determined to show us, ultimately giving up showing us, that they can, when at long last they figure out, no, I really can't. And it weakens the resolve of most of us, cripples many of us. I mean, truth is, only the most resilient move on and don't let it impact their life in some way. Or their confidence. Some learn to accept help. Most don't. That's just my observation. It's just my experience. I reserve the right to be wrong, and I freely admit that I can be jaded. A lifetime of going the wrong way provides what evidence do we have that it can be turned around? I mean, if you've been going the wrong way for so long, why do you suddenly now plant your flag and make this bold declaration? I can turn this around. I can turn this around now. I understand the importance of belief and confidence. In fact, just about every day, I find myself telling somebody that belief and confidence is everything. It's hyperbolic. It's metaphorical. You know, maybe it's not everything, but boy, it's close. I don't think I'm far from wrong. I've seen genuinely confident people with lower levels of competence far outperform superior competency with low confidence. Don't assume that knowing is the same as doing. It is not. Hence all those diet books that are written and published and sold. And I dare say, countless of them not ever read. With new authors, new experts entering the space every day, new customers entering probably every hour, I've lived long enough to have learned that if I could grant myself or those people that I love and care about, if I could grant them one human quality that may likely fuel greater success, it clearly would be confidence. And I'm not talking about making them braggarts. I'm not talking about making them into pompous, arrogant, obnoxious human beings. I'm talking about gifting them quiet confidence that's best described as an inner belief. I know I can turn it around. That isn't the declaration of a person who has that. That's not the declaration of a person who has a really strong inner belief. It's the declaration of a person who is trying to find that. It's the admission of a person that they lack that. And that's the very thing that's helping them go in the wrong direction. I mean, like the drunk driver entering the exit ramp. It's insanely easy when you are not thinking clearly. And those of us who are sober, we look at that on-ramp and we realize, I mean, you've got to maneuver. You have absolutely got to be gifted at maneuvering your car in this awkward position to take an exit ramp as your on-ramp. But sobriety is like wisdom and confidence. And drunkenness is like foolishness and insecurity and doubt. I'm a big believer in words. The verbiage matters, especially the words that we tell ourselves. And so I completely understand the self-talk and the outer talk manifested by our self-talk to make that statement and to make it out loud. I know I can turn it around. But I also know what I mean most when I say it. I'm not declaring quiet belief. I'm not declaring a true inner belief that I can do it, that I will do it. Rather, I'm asking the person to whom I am making that declaration to express their belief in me because I don't have enough. It's false bravado, nothing more. And I think that's universally true. I think it's universally true for everybody who does the same thing, utters the famous words, I know I can turn it around. You know, sometimes people might respond, well, of course you can. Yeah, that doesn't help. I mean, come on. I don't believe what I'm saying to myself. I don't believe what I'm saying to you. Why do you think I'm going to believe you? But it's a process that we try. You know, just like the little kid trying something and then failing over and over until they figure it out or until they give up and quit. Fruit flies live 40 to 50 days. I don't know why that's important. Only by comparison, because cheerleading, rah-rah, yes, you can do it. That might last 40 to 50 seconds at most. That's why it doesn't work. It's not deep enough. It's not a deep enough expression of belief to make a lasting impact. When somebody says, oh, sure you can, or yeah, you can. Does reasoning work? Well, it can. Now, there aren't any guarantees. I do know this much. Without evidence or strategy, we're just wishing. We're not hoping. Hoping is not the same thing as wishing. Most people do a whole lot of wishing. And I'm cynical enough to think that most people, at the very least, many people, are rather hopeless, especially when it comes to people in their life, perhaps even with their own lives. You know, there are some people that I love who are living foolishly, destructive, wasteful lives. I can't say I have hope because I have no influence. I have no impact on their life. Nothing is happening to provide hope. But I'm filled with wishes. I wish circumstances would come their way to cause them to rethink their current path. I wish they would come to themselves and wisen up. But you know, at the end of the day, it's nothing more than a wish. If they were taking actions to turn it around, then I'd have hope. Hope that their actions would benefit them. Hope that their actions might resolve their problems. But until their mind is made up to turn it around, and until they begin to take some actions to demonstrate their mind is made up, yeah, I'm going to have to restrict myself to wishing, not hoping. Now, this is a really big, important topic because every human life experiences it. The words that we ascribe to the feelings are dreaming, wishing, and hoping. And too often we use those terms interchangeably. They are not the same. They're not even close. Well, let's look at what dictionaries have to say about it, shall we? And at least it'll give us some starting point. Dreaming or dreams, fantasies about something greatly desired. Well, every child does it easily. And some of us, well, we can maintain it well into our adulthood. We can still dream. And they're useful. They're useful because they speak to something that we greatly desire. Don't our accomplishments stem from that? Well, of course they do. We set out to learn and to perform things because we really want to do them. And so dreaming can certainly have a positive impact, and it can add fuel to our pursuits. Or they can just remain fantasies, and we can decide it'd be great, but they're not really worthy of our effort. We just rather fantasize about having them. It's kind of like the way I am with playing the guitar. I can dream about, man, wouldn't it be great to know how to play the guitar? But I'm not willing for that dream to fuel the pursuit to actually learn. And then there's wishing. Wishes, defined as a strong desire or hope for something that is not easily attainable. Want something that cannot or probably will not happen. I'm going to take some issue with the insertion of the word hope in this definition, but I do understand the usage, a strong desire or hope for something that is not easily attainable. Why is it a wish? Well, not because of our strong desire, but because of the practicality of it. Because the dream was defined as something that is greatly desired. It's a wish not because of strong desire, but because of the practicality of it. It is not easily attainable. It can't happen, or it probably won't happen. Dreams can serve a positive purpose to fuel actions. Wishes can't. They don't serve us. They don't serve anybody. We just hold them because they feel good for us. And feeling good, unfortunately, does not result in doing anything productive. No turning happens because of wishing. Well, what about hoping? What about hopes? Defined as want something to happen or be the case. Intend, if possible, to do something. Dreams have desire that may or may not spark action. Wishes have desire incapable of doing anything. Hopes have desire with intentions. Something is being done to make it so. Well, now, these are really critical differences, and these are also really critical feelings and words because they speak to our making needed turns. Sadly, we likely lean more into the first two feelings, which may provide answers for why we don't turn things around more often or more easily. We're stuck dreaming and wishing, both feelings that lack one really critical ingredient, action. Turn is a verb. It's an action word. Sure, we make the turn first in our head, and we've talked about that before. I mean, few things are as powerful as a mind made up. It's getting to that point, though, that's tough. It's getting to the point where we make up our mind. It's getting to the point where we make up our mind that we're actually going to do something. That's the tough part. Once you make up your mind to do it, okay, well, now you got the other tough part, and that is you got to put it to work. You have to put in the work to figure out how to go about it. Scenario planning in our head can cause us to quit before we ever turn the wheel, because doubt and fear interrupt our best laid plans in our head. Because I know what you're saying. What if it doesn't work? What if it doesn't work? It's a real concern. I mean, never mind that we're still going the wrong direction. Never mind that it's highly unlikely that we're going to veer into an even more wrong direction. I mean, come on, we're already going the wrong way. Yeah, you can go more the wrong way, I suppose, but, you know, it's kind of like hitting bottom. when you hit bottom, there's nowhere to go but up. Our thoughts can paralyze us from moving the wheel at all. And none of it's very logical or practical or even likely. And yet still here we are, filled with fear and doubt, going the wrong way. We're not afraid of going the wrong way. We're afraid of turning. People who overthink hear the constant admonition, stop overthinking it. Just do it. Well, it's a little bit like telling a fat person, be thin, stop being fat. Well, easy for you to say, you're thin. Guess why you're thin? Because you don't suffer the slow metabolism or the lack of confidence that the fat guy suffers from. And rich folks don't suffer the same maladies that come from poverty either. And so when the rich say, well, stop being poor. Enter empathy, which is understanding, and compassion, which is doing something with that empathy. You only know what you know. The fat guy understands what it is to be fat, but he can judge the thin guy just as easily as the thin guy can judge him, and neither one of them may have any understanding of the other or their plight. It takes work to do that. It takes listening to do that. Work that, well, too many of us were just not willing to put in. It's just easier to call you a name and be done with it, right? Meanwhile, back inside the head, our brains are firing on all cylinders, convincing us this may never be possible for me. And so we verbalize our desire, and we're hoping to spark within us some newfound remedy called confidence or belief. I know I can turn it around. Translation, I'd like to, but I'm not sure I can. I'm more sure it won't. Well, I'm more sure that I won't be able to, in spite of the fact that I really would like to. Hope is not a strategy, but it's born of a strategy. Without hope, we're living nothing more than fantasies, dreaming and wishing that we were somebody or something different. Wishing, dreaming that we were better. Wishing, dreaming that we could or would turn it around. Hope is needful. It's useful. It's necessary. The key is to move from dreaming and wishing to hoping. I think there's a big challenge. And that means that you've got to deploy some actions. You have to do something. And it can't be the same thing that you've been doing. At least not if you want a different result. And you do. You do want a different result, or you would not be thinking of turning it around or turning over a new leaf. You would happily keep living under the same leaf as if, well, it's doing everything that you most want it to do. But it's not doing everything you most want it to do, which is why you want to turn over a new leaf. You're dissatisfied. You might even be miserable. Only when we are sick and tired of being sick and tired do we normally do something different. Come on, this is why major events provoke the most substantial changes in people's lives. The guy with a horrible diet, poor fitness, gets a wake-up call when he is rushed to the ER with chest pains. A survivable heart attack wakes him up, and the doctor tells him what he has to do to save his own life. Well, now, guess what? He's open to what the doctor's telling him. Last week, not so much. All those visits where the doctor said, you need to drop 50 pounds. Nah, he didn't pay that any mind. But today, his whole worldview is different. Why? He is scared. He is scared enough to do something he's never done before. Defeat or failure is not an option. Not in his mind, because his mind is fully made up. You know what he's going to do? Yes, he's going to turn it around, and he's going to begin right now, and he means it. Years later, he may tell everybody. In fact, it probably won't be years. It will probably be in short order. He will tell everybody he knows how this heart attack was the very best thing to ever happen to him. It has changed his life. Because without it, he'd likely have continued his poor behavior, his poor work habits, his poor fitness and health habits, and he would have died of a massive, unsurvivable heart attack. And still we wait. What are we waiting on? I can tell you what we're waiting on. We're waiting for the blowout on our car or the heart attack. Proactive change, turning over a new leaf, turning it around without provocation, is crazy hard. Crazy hard. Winds of change help. But we're not leaves. Leaves lack the ability to turn themselves. We're not so powerless. We can change at will, in an instant, if we will. We largely don't because we don't think we can. And we may feel like we're nothing more powerful than a leaf. And so turning never happens, right? We're just hanging here, doing what we always did, getting what we always got, not happy, not satisfied, sometimes quite dissatisfied and miserable. And it's not because we don't need to change or need to turn, but because we think somebody else has the wheel. Hello, victim. Feeling sorry for ourselves is super effective. No, not in helping us turn it around, but in helping us remain stuck or lost or worse. It's super effective. You know it works like a champ. Taking action helps. You know what? Even if it's the wrong action, which frankly is only evident by taking action. Otherwise, how are you going to know? There's no way to find out. There's no way that you can find out if the action that you're going to take, if it's going to work or not. Turning the wheel, it's the only way to change direction. It's the only way to find out. In the absence of courage or confidence, we ought to try diving headlong into hope. And I'm talking about real hope. The kind of hope that relies on doing something worthy of hope. And maybe that's a key consideration. Leaning so far into hope that we understand it's just a dream or a wish until we take action. We can take a dream, we can take a wish, and we can apply some action. And now we've changed it to hope. You know, sometimes I'll catch myself using a phrase, meaningful action. I'm coming to believe that I need to stop using that terminology because, I mean, meaningful action is only evidenced by taking any kind of action. I mean, just today I engaged in a conversation to encourage somebody. He's pursuing an opportunity and he's a little bit nervous and he's a little bit anxious about it. My role, encourager. And so we're on the phone and I set about to help increase his confidence, not, yeah, come on, you got this, you can do this. No, more substantial than that. He's a business guy, and we both know business problems are solved by first making an assumption. And so I remind him of these things. He knows this, but I put language to it and reminded him. Not a false assumption necessarily, but we do make assumptions of some sort. What business people do is we survey the situation, we gather whatever evidence is readily available, and then we begin to work out a solution. Working out a solution means that we don't begin with the entire known universe. What do we begin with? We begin with whatever assumptions we can make based on the evidence at hand. The real work now begins as we work to determine, are my assumptions correct or not? And the only way to find out is to take actions based on our assumptions, and then we make adjustments along the way. The only way to measure our assumptions, act on them. And that's how our lives work too. The only way to figure out what works is to try stuff. But we're not out here behaving willy-nilly without any direction. Like business people who look at a problem, gather evidence, and then make an assumption to give them a starting point, we have to do the same thing. Business people competing in the market don't have the luxury of sitting around wishing or dreaming that things might be better. We have got to busy ourselves making them better or trying. And if we don't, our businesses die. So, I reviewed the evidence of my friend's qualifications to successfully pursue and to seize this opportunity. And we walked through my assumptions based on the evidence of his experience, his skills, his credentials. And I presented compelling evidence. You know, man, I was like Alan Shore on Boston Legal. I was great. I presented this case for these assumptions that have evidence behind them. Well, he couldn't deny. He could not deny my conclusions. He had to agree. Now, does it mean that we're right? I don't know. Only one way to find out. Test them. Test them by chasing this opportunity with an intensity based on the belief that we're correct. We're right. I mean, what's the worst thing that can happen? Because we can travel lost for our entire lives. But sometimes we don't turn it around. This is amazing to me. A person can be lost and waste their entire life knowing at various moments of their life, at the very least, and maybe constantly being nagged, you need to turn it around. And yet they don't. Going in the wrong direction dramatically impacts the quality of our lives, but it doesn't likely affect us in a death match. And so people are able to live sometimes long, long wasted lives. Now, it could affect us in a death match. There are things like drunkenness and drug addiction and gambling addictions and criminal behavior and things that can absolutely shorten our lives. But no matter how long you live, no matter how short a life you live, you don't want it to be as good as it can be. You don't want it to be as profitable as it can be. You don't want to have the very best influence and impact on people that you love, or maybe the people that you once loved. Permit another scripture here. Ecclesiastes chapter 8, verse 11. Because the sentence against an evil work is not executed speedily, therefore the heart of the sons of men is fully set in them to do evil. Maybe there's a key there. Because things don't change instantly, we get complacent and we get fixated on continuing to do what we've always done. Sure, we hope for an improved outcome. No, we don't. We wish and we dream for an improved outcome. Mostly, we crave the comfort of the known. And for many of us, that comfort trumps an improved result. The direction that we know, even if it's the wrong direction, is comfortable. So we keep going. We're accustomed to facing this specific direction. Never mind that a different direction would help us grow. Never mind that a different direction, turning it around, would give us a much improved view. We're comfortable. We're comfortable facing this way because, well, we've been facing this way all of our lives. How can we yearn more for a new direction? How can we be driven enough, curious enough, to carve a new path, even if it's one that we have never before experienced? Logically, we know everything that we've ever learned began with enough curiosity, enough courage to try something we had never tried before. I dare say most times it worked out well. Sometimes it worked out very well. I would argue that with most of us, very few times did it not work out and not work out well. Maybe the research that Dan Pink referred to is important. That third drive, our deep-seated desire to direct our own lives, to extend and expand our abilities, and to live a life of purpose. Maybe there's something to that. No, there is something to that. But does it exist to the degree that it should to help us turn it around? How deeply seated is that desire? Well, that's entirely up to us. And only us. Yeah, sure, other people can encourage us, but nobody can do it for us. It could be the desire isn't deeply seated enough. It could be that we're not interested in extending or expanding our abilities. We're not interested in learning. It could be that we lack purpose, or we don't know the purpose. These are really big variables in the equation. And any single one of those could wreck us in turning it around. I wish I was different. I wish I was better. That might be the lamentation of your life. Today, I just want to help you make one change, one shift in how you frame your life. Stop wishing, stop dreaming, and instead, hope. Hope things are better and different. Remember, hope needs a basis. Hope needs some evidence. And that's where you make a big, big, it's where you make the difference. You do things that will provide you with hope. You take some action. You turn the wheel in a different direction. And then you pay attention. Did the turn benefit you? Are you now headed more toward your desired outcome? If so, keep on going. Maybe turn a little bit more. See if it takes you closer or further away from the goal. And you keep on adjusting till you get it turned around. William Faulkner wrote, "You cannot swim for new horizons until you have courage to lose sight of the shore." Swimming's required. Turning. Actions are taken because of your strong desire to control your own life. As Jack Welch, former chief of General Electric, was fond of saying, and I'm fond of it enough that I say it often, control your own destiny, or somebody else will. And there it is. Episode 5036, Leaning Toward Wisdom, the podcast, Modern Tales of an Ancient Pursuit. I don't claim that we're always chasing. Well, I do claim we're always chasing it. I don't claim we're always catching it. But we're always trying, you know. We're at least doing stuff. I hope today you'll do stuff. I know I can turn it around. Turning over a new leaf and other turnings. My name is Randy Cantrell. The website is leaningtowardwisdom.com. I hope you'll join the Facebook group. You can find a link over at the website. Greetings and welcome inside the Yellow Studio.